This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. Israel suffered heavy losses in southern Lebanon today as Hezbollah militants killed 8 soldiers in a battle for a key town. Israel says it wants to establish 1.2-mile-wide security zone in south Lebanon that would be free of Hezbollah guerrillas. Again, that's 10 kilometers, 1.2 miles. And 1.2 miles. Why don't we just stick with that? And Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki insisted today that his country is a front line in the war on terrorism and said those behind the rampant violence there are perverting the Islamic faith. Al-Maliki's comments came during a speech before a joint meeting of Congress. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Fidel Castro turns 80 years old next month, raising the question, what happens to Cuba when he's gone? Cuba after Castro tomorrow on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And right now it's Wednesday, and time for our political junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
Partisans sparring over Iraq and the Middle East ensnares Iraq's prime minister. The Senate passes an interstate abortion bill. Former President Bill Clinton hits the hustings for Joe Lieberman in Connecticut. Could Nevada leapfrog New Hampshire as the second stop in the presidential primary campaigns? And the identity of a Republican senatorial candidate who confessed that the R next to his name on the ballot was a scarlet letter. If you have questions or comments about this week's political news, give us a call. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk at npr.org. Our resident political junkie, Ken Rudin, is away on vacation. We're happy to have a worthy guest junkie with us. Fred Grandy served 4 terms as a Republican congressman from Iowa. He co-hosts a radio show here in Washington called the Grandy and Andy Morning Show, and some of you may remember him as the actor who played Gopher on the television series The Love Boat. Fred Grandy, nice to have you back on the program.
This is the first time I've been referred to as a guest junkie. I'm going to take that on face value.
Here in Washington, both parties are blaming each other for political grandstanding in the run-up to the midterm elections. Let's begin with the visit of Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. Several Democratic leaders criticized al-Maliki for his denunciation of Israel, which ignored Hezbollah. That's the group that triggered this conflict 2 weeks ago. Some Democrats threatened to boycott his address this morning to Congress. Republicans say they're playing politics.
Well, I think this is the equivalent of political opera. Charles Schumer, Harry Reid, Barbara Boxer, the usual suspects, criticizing al-Maliki for not being tough on Hezbollah. Not a lot of people were tough on Hezbollah before Israel started getting tough on Hezbollah. They've been around since, the first time I really became aware of them, when they blew up the Marine barracks during the Reagan administration. But the fact of the matter is, there was a lot of Sturm und Drang this morning. We talked about it on our program as to why al-Maliki did not denounce Hezbollah. You got to understand that in that part of the world, for a guy who was trying to cobble together what may be the most fragile coalition on earth right now, assuming it even survives, to come out in favor of Israel, I think would pretty much doom his administration, tentative as it is. So my first reaction, and I think the administration's correct reaction, was cut the guy some slack. Let's hear what he has to say. Let's keep in mind that our eye on the prize is in Baghdad right now, not necessarily in southern Lebanon. We're concerned, but he is our best hope. And let's keep in mind also, he wasn't even our first choice. But he was the Iraqis' choice after a long deliberation, and he may be the best we get.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, the Senate passed a bill that would make it a crime to help a pregnant girl cross state lines to have an abortion in order to skirt parental notification laws. Democrats say this is Republican grandstanding, part of their campaign to motivate their political base.
Okay, that's all true. And the problem with that is, let's face it, as we get closer, we're now kind of in the middle innings of the campaign. The Republicans are going to galvanize their base and move out from that. The other question about abortion, Neil, is I think worth talking about. There's a strategy now, seeing as how we pretty much, I think, are convinced that Roe v. Wade will not be repealed. It's not all that dissimilar to what our policy was towards nuclear weapons and nuclear disarmament in the 50s and 60s. It's a policy of containment. You fight on the margins. Parental notification, parental consent are marginal kinds of fights, and Republicans need those little victories to sustain their base, probably now more than ever, because they're losing a lot of ground on issues like immigration.
And the base is particularly unhappy with, among other things, they say, this Congress has not done much on abortion. This is the first law that's been passed.
And for those of us that still kind of call ourselves fiscal conservatives, this has been a Congress that has flown in the face of what we thought were bedrock Republican principles, which was balance the budget and keep spending down.
Mm-hmm. Also on terrorism, many members of the base are upset, saying this administration is not doing enough to help Israel and not addressing those terrorist states, those that harbor terrorists that the president denounced after 9/11.
Well, that's a question that, unfortunately, we're going to face time and time again. At this point, I'm very pleased with what Condoleezza Rice said, or perhaps didn't say, in Rome. She was very tight-lipped and said, look, there's no deal to be made here. We're not going to negotiate with Hezbollah because they are not a legitimate entity. On the other side of the argument, many of the states in the Arab League, the European Union, and the United Nations tend to look upon Hezbollah as if they're already legitimized as the government of Lebanon. That's not true. I'm sure that's what they aspire to be, but the U.S. and Israel at this point are saying no, and I agree with that.
Well, let's bring another voice into the conversation now. Dana Milbank of The Washington Post joins us from the Post studios, not too many blocks from here. Hey, Dana.
Hey, Dana.
Hello, Neil. Hello, Gopher.
You write a regular column in the Post called Washington Sketch, which chronicles the political theater inside the Beltway. You've certainly never lost for material. Yesterday's paper, you wrote about a Republican candidate for Senate who agreed to speak candidly about his party and about President Bush only if his identity were not to be revealed. Of course, this is Washington, D.C. And 24 hours later, we all know who it is.
Yeah, now the question is, which one of you ratted him out?
We figured it would be out by midnight after we put it on the web at 9. But, you know, it's true in this town, particularly when you have a lunch in a prominent Capitol Hill a steakhouse with 9 journalists. And I think, unfortunately, other journalists were invited to that, so they knew who the guy was as well. And they probably weren't subject to the same ground rules. So it leaked out pretty
Dana,
fast.
Dan, excuse me. I mean, you didn't just fall off the turnip truck. You know that Michael Steele knew this was going to get out, particularly in the era of blogs, because what the reporters concealed, the blogs reveal, right? So surely he knew that this was going to get out.
I think so. I mean, I tried to talk them all day into actually putting it on the record because, you know, if you're running in the state of Maryland, heavily Democratic, you know, it's good politics to say nasty things about the president
right.
and the Republican leadership. And throughout the lunch, he was saying things like, you know, as lieutenant governor of Maryland. So technically, I was within my rights to, mm-hmm. to print that. But we decided to try to give him a break here, knowing full well that this is the sort of thing that would happen. And then he ultimately outed himself.
What do you think of the strategy? It seems to me that a guy like Michael Steele, who was running behind enemy lines in the state of Maryland, needs to come down very hard on the administration's response to Katrina, which is now emerging as a black-white issue.
It is, and Michael Steele is black, so he's running a very unorthodox campaign. When you think about it, he was really tough on Bush on Katrina and mm-hmm. really tough on Iraq. Well, so has almost everybody else in both parties. So he wasn't really, he's behind Bush on stem cells, on gay marriage, on abortion, on flag burning, really pretty much conservative down the line. I think he picked a couple of spots very carefully, and it was just the rhetoric was really kind of hot when he said that, you know, having an R next to his name is a scarlet letter. It was really the style more than the substance.
As a candidate, though, it's a net plus for him, wouldn't you agree?
I would think so. It certainly would have been a net plus if he just out and said it. Now he looks, he has a danger of looking a bit cowardly and people may be making fun of him a bit. But sure, Bush is at 32% in Maryland. How could it hurt him to criticize the president?
Interestingly, his boss, Governor Ehrlich, who's also running, said, well, you know, that's Michael, he's an independent opinion. That's why he'll be a great senator. And then, of course, somebody asked him, well, do you endorse his opinions?
Well, Ehrlich is running worse in the polls in his reelection bid than Steele is running in the polls for his bid for the Senate. So that may tell you something. And maybe before long, Bob Ehrlich's going to be having us all over to lunch.
But, you know, there's a cadre right now of I can think of at least 4 Republicans, Susan Collins, Olympia Snow, obviously Lincoln Chafee, even Arlen Specter, who earlier this week said he was going to sue the president. So they're already, a distinguished group of Republican apostates in the Senate. So if Michael Steele joins that crowd, he's still a Republican. They still have the majority.
Sure. And it, based on what he's been saying about his policies, he's going to vote with him down the line. But, you know, John Thune even has been critical of the president on Iraq.
Republican from South Dakota, right. Not in the Northeast.
Who took out Tom Daschle.
Yeah.
Hastened.
Yeah. No. I mean, everybody fancies themselves a little John McCain now.
Interestingly, this subject came up, as you might imagine, at the White House briefing today, and administration White House spokesman Tony Snow said, look, the president understands what politics are about. He wants Michael Steele to be elected as senator, but he declined to say how the president responded when told what Steele had said. I could, but I won't, Snow said, then remarked, I think the comments have come to his attention.
I like that.
Well, the other problem was, of course, Bill Frist dropped in on the lunch and was mentioned in the story. So you can be sure that he was on the horn with the White House early in the morning telling them exactly who had said these things.
Mm-hmm. As this shakes out, there's a degree of McCainism or independent streak that is afflicting Republican candidates across the country, not just in the Northeast, but to survive in the Northeast, and in this sense, Maryland would have to be included in that, you'd have to be running independent of the president.
You sure have, and they've really made no secret of that. The Congress is looking out for its own hide right now, and that's why they've been bucking the president on a large range of issues, not least of which is the recent stem cell vote. But there's definitely a sense in politics that it's every man for himself, and that's why they always say if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog.
Well, the president still has at least, if not a friend, an ally in the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, who's made no bones about saying on immigration, it's border security first. And then we'll talk about all the other stuff, maybe.
He has. Hastert's been criticized the president on a whole bunch of other issues. Remember the raid of Congressman Jefferson's office, the guy who had the $90,000 in his freezer. So even Hastert, for all his loyalty, has been making some distance with the president.
Dana Milbank, thanks very much for being with us. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Dana Milbank of the Washington Post, who joined us from the Post studios here in Washington, D.C. Our guest political junkie this week is Fred Grandy, a former four-term congressman from Iowa and the co-host of the Grandy and Andy Morning Show on WMAL here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get some callers in on the conversation. By the way, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Matt is calling. Matt from Salt Lake City.
I was going to actually ask about Prime Minister Maliki, but I've been thinking about it. And if they do send in a security force into southern Lebanon, northern Israel, I'm sure they'll the first ceasefire to happen for those people to actually be able to go in and monitor that area. Israel demand Hezbollah disarms. Do you think there will be any traction in the international community for stopping the illegal flyovers that Israel has been doing prior to the abduction of their soldiers and the minefields that they left in southern Lebanon and refused to give maps to? Do you think they'll hand that stuff over to, do you just think this is going to be a fair bargain, or is it just going to be pushing Hezbollah in Lebanon into the hands of another Western-backed puppet?
The mandate of this force, if there is to be such a force, Fred Grandy, for southern Lebanon, that is going to be absolutely critical and a subject that's going to be hammered out at the UN for quite some time.
As I look at what's unfolding in Israel and Lebanon and also in Rome, it looks as though the U.S. has a better shot of succeeding militarily and tactically right now than diplomatically. A ceasefire, as it's interpreted by every other country but the United States, is essentially just stopping the firing back and forth, which redounds to Hezbollah's benefit. A cessation of violence, which is what Condoleezza Rice called for, would imply a NATO type of force that would come in and have the ability to root out, stop, and perhaps even disarm Hezbollah. For most of the people sitting around the table, that's not an option, because I don't think they want to do that. So for the United States, when they talk about a meaningful and permanent ceasefire, I think that's something that's probably going to have to be won on the battlefield as opposed to the table, at least for the next couple of weeks.
And let's get another caller in. This is Bob. Bob calling us from Medford in Massachusetts.
Yes, I'm wondering what your guests think of the possibility of the Democrats taking over either the House or the Senate. It's my perception, and it's only a perception, that so many state legislatures have been stacked by the Republicans that knocking off enough incumbents to get control of either the body of the legislature is going to be extremely difficult.
Legislatures redrawing congressional district lines to, help incumbents on both parties, Fred Grandy.
Yeah, and I would say that that was probably a deal sealed in secret by both Republicans and Democrats to fortify incumbents. If you look at the last series of elections, you're seeing a much greater degree of incumbency, whether it's Republican or Democrat. So the odds are, at least at this point, that Republicans would retain the House. Now, that's assuming the Democrats do not succeed in their goal in nationalizing the election, in making it a referendum on Iraq. I don't see how they'll make it a referendum on immigration, because they haven't really gotten out in front of that issue the way certain factions of the Republican Party have. But I would have to assume that if we are still embroiled in southern Lebanon and it looks as though the president's Mideast policy has come a cropper, that will win a few Republican seats for Democrats in the House and possibly even the Senate in November.
I think, again, going back to that secret identity interview that Mr. Steele gave to The Washington Post, he said, if this election comes down to a Republicans versus Democrats, I lose.
Yeah, but that would have been true in Maryland no matter what.
That's true.
There's one other point I'd like to get you guys to address.
Yeah.
I live in the Northeast, and the Northeast still has got some representatives from the Republican Party. I'm getting a very strong sense, for example, in New Jersey, that the one or two, if not more, of the Republicans could lose just because New Jersey has just swung so heavily against George Bush. Is it possible that where nobody's looking in the states that are reasonably well established, that they could pick up 2 seats in Massachusetts, 3 in New Jersey, 1 in Maine, that kind of thing?
It could be, but again, redistricting notwithstanding, Republicans always have the edge financially, and I can tell you as a guy who ran for election 4 different times, most seats are lost not because of issues, but because of pilot error. The member crashes and burns himself or herself. That will invariably happen come this fall, but that is something we cannot predict.
And interesting, I think the last poll I saw in the Senate race in New Jersey showed young Tom Kane Jr., I think, maybe even a little bit ahead of the Democratic incumbent, Bob Menendez.
Yeah, Bob Menendez, of course, took over for John Corzine when he became the governor.
I'm sorry. The one Republican you can see definitely in trouble is in Rhode Island, John Chafee.
You mean Lincoln Chafee?
Lincoln Chafee, yes. Yeah. John Chafee.
John Chafee was never in trouble.
Never in
trouble.
Rhode Island. Anyway, Fred Grandy, it's been wonderful to have you with
Thanks,
us. And
Neil.
Filling in for Ken Rudin, who's been away on vacation. And he'll be back, I think, next week with another edition of Political Junkie. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Land, and take over this beautiful land.